Cowboy Chronicles, the Oklahomans, Oklahoma State Football Podcast. I am your host, Scott Wright, joined by Jacob Utter. Jacob, you're back. We're at Stone Cloud, and you're back to the show after missing last week.
Yeah, you couldn't get rid of me that long.
No, no. And you did make me buy you a 12-pack of Stone Cloud to bring home. It's all right. I don't need to be reimbursed. It's okay. No, kidding. Of course, great day being back here. It's Bedlam Week. All sorts of excitement. We had some fun chats with Mike Gundy today. A lot to talk about. But first, as always, what you drinking?
I have not drank half of this yet, by the way.
Right.
The keg blew.
Yeah.
When they're pouring it, so I think I got more coming my way, maybe. I'm not sure. Anyways, I am changing up a little bit and going with the Stone Cloud Brown. It's mm-hmm. a newer one. It came out, I think, about a little over a week ago.
I think so, yeah.
Because I was bummed I couldn't try it last week on the show. So it's really good. Got a really good, rich malt flavor to it. Really good. Really, it's fall. Well, it feels like winter today here. But it's technically fall.
Yeah.
It's a great fall beer with Halloween being tomorrow.
Right.
So I really like it. It's a good choice.
Yeah.
What about you?
You're also dressed up as a Rangers fan, I see.
This is my costume this year.
Uh-huh.
Diehard Rangers fan who is full of anxiety, dread, upset stomach, not vomiting. No vomiting. You know, all those symptoms that come with a team being in the World Series.
Yeah.
I'm feeling that right now. And as some people know, I went to game one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still, I think I came down from the high of that yesterday, maybe a little bit, maybe today. Because today I've been filled with a lot of just dread knowing the series is tied at one.
Yeah. And we're obviously on a deadline here now because game three is tonight and got work to do. So got to get going. But me, I am drinking Holt My Beer 2. We had this last year on the show. Yeah. It was fantastic. I haven't even tried it yet, but I'm getting ready to.
Oh, I was going to say, you've tried it yet?
Not even worried about it. I know it's going to be fantastic. I really like the one from last year. I even found it a few other times later in the year when it was still around.
Mm-hmm.
Big time fan and really looking forward to this one. But with that, this one is for GoPokes 1983. Now, four straight weeks for GoPokes 1983 to win. He had 37-17 for his score prediction.
Yeah.
Of course, as you know, if you're watching on YouTube, go down into the comments, post your score prediction for Bedlam, and have a chance to win a beer that we will drink for you on the show next week. We need some more people to get in there to go and try to challenge this this four-week run for GoPokes 1983.
He's on an Ollie Gordon-type run.
Absolutely.
With the picks right now.
Really
Ollie Gordon-type run.
Absolutely. I feel that way, too. I got some Twizzlers.
Oh, I already ate my little
candy dish. Out of the candy dish. Really excited about that. I'll save that for after the show because the sound of me chewing Twizzlers is not ideal for podcast audio.
And I'm pretty sure Stone Cloud has a Halloween event going on tomorrow night. I don't know if we have details around this
year. Certainly decorated.
But they're decorated up, but I know last year they did stuff. And I know the neighborhood around here does stuff, so get out here for Halloween for Stone Cloud.
Yes, exactly. Also on your list of things to do, go to Oklahoman.com, subscribe to the Oklahoma State Cowboys newsletter, which we produce for you every week. Got something fun that we haven't actually decided on yet, but it'll be fun, we promise. Probably Bedlam related, I would assume, but like I said,
I think it should be Baylor related or something.
Okay, that's fine.
Just to mix it up this week. You know, I'm sick of Bedlam talk.
Right.
Just talk about Baylor. They're not playing Baylor, but let's just talk about them.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
They might play them next year.
That's true. You don't know. It'll definitely be Bedlam related.
Yeah. So got all that coming. As we mentioned, a lot of fun talking to Mike Gundy. Bedlam Monday is always a fun one because he'll always get into telling old stories, spinning old yarns, all those different things that he is capable of doing in a very entertaining way. Lots of Brian Bosworth talk in the Gundy story time today. That was good stuff. People have to go read your story to see all the good bits of that. But obviously, this is the last one of these for the foreseeable future. It's a big deal, and as much as Gundy doesn't want to fully admit that this is a huge deal, it is, and he knows it, he realizes it. He just doesn't like to admit it because he doesn't want his players thinking it's any bigger deal than Kansas State 3 weeks ago or whatever.
And I got his point because he talked about Kansas State was bigger. I got his point because he started saying Kansas State was bigger, and then Kansas was bigger, and then but the West Virginia winning on the road was bigger,
right?
And then winning last week against Cincinnati was bigger. Because if they'd have lost one of those games, this game is not as important as
right.
it is.
Exactly.
On the field, in the Big 12 standings. It still is important because it's the last bedlam. And OSU really, he's not going to say this, they really want those bragging rights to win the final bedlam.
Right.
For however long it will be is the final bedlam. They really want that. And it's really important. And he admitted that the game's important. But
yes.
I get his point, because for this game to really, really matter, you had to win those other ones if you're OSU.
Right.
And so I understand what he was trying to say there.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I know fans get frustrated by that, and they want him to take the less miles approach.
Or the Mike Boynton approach.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And blow this up and make it a week that feels different. And while there is some excitement in that moment, it's the aftermath that, as a coach, you have to manage. Because if you, I remember eighth grade, first time playing school football, Mustang Week showed up for us at UConn, and it was a different vibe in practice starting on Monday. Mm-hmm. And the coach is walking around while we're in stretch lines and saying all this stuff to get us fired up. And I get that. You can build some energy that way. But then when it's over, are you building your team up for a crash, an emotional letdown? Whatever it might be. So I understand why Gundy has his philosophy. If it was me, I would probably be more in the less miles Mike Boynton school of things, because it feels more natural.
Yeah.
But Gundy has his reasons for doing this, and it is what it is. So
my other question too, though, is I think there's so much of the portal era and things like that too, like, and Gundy, this was also what Gundy made a point of. These players all know each other. They're right. friends. They go to each other's games. They've worked out together. They've played together. They've done all these things a lot of different ways. And so the rivalry loses its luster because these guys are more than just opponents anymore with each
right.
other. They know each other. And so I kind of understand that too, because so then I think if Gundy feels like, maybe Gundy feels like if he gets too high emotionally,
right,
it makes it too much what it is, then it kind of spirals things in a weird way that these players don't really care that it goes that way.
Yeah, and his analysis of what rivalries have become, I think, is spot on.
Yeah,
because the hatred is not there the way that it used to be.
Yeah.
In not just Bedlam, but across the board. You know, he always points to the NFL, and I don't know how. I was never that invested as a fan when I was younger in NFL rivalries, so I don't know how those are different. But he's absolutely right now that you know when you got guys changing teams so much as free agents, all those different things that play into that. The hatred between the Bears and Packers is not what it was in the 80s. You know, so. It's just kind of the nature of the world right now. It's different. So
unless it's Rangers Astros, then the hatred's real.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
I'm gonna bring it all back to the Rangers, everybody.
Yeah. all right. Well, let's jump into to some talk about the actual football game itself. Let's start with the Big 12 standings, because I find this fascinating for multiple reasons. A 5-way tie for first place right now, obviously OU and OSU both in that. The fact that OSU is in it at all after where this team was after 4 weeks still blows my mind. I remember, and this was even before they had lost to Iowa State, but this was after the South Alabama loss, standing there with Casey Dunn asking questions about how they get back on track and all of that. And he's like, we still got all of our goals ahead of us. We can still go win a Big 12 championship. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever you say.
Good goal to have, cool.
Yeah, whatever you say. And and now they're right in the thick of this thing. And
getting better while they're doing it.
Getting better. They have, out of the five teams left, the easiest schedule remaining. They play OU, and then four teams from the bottom half three teams from the bottom half of the conference. So they've got the most favorable schedule the rest of the way out. It feels very weird to be in this position based on where we were a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think even going into the season, I don't know that we expected them to be in a first place battle at this point in the season. And then the way things started so poorly, and then to be here, and Gundy was asked today, I thought it was interesting, who gets the credit? Mm-hmm. Right, the players, the coaches, and I think it's both.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a mix there. I think there's credit to be given for Casey Dunn for adapting the playbook and finding a way to get Ollie Gordon the ball as much as possible,
right,
and getting Brennan Presley more involved and making Alan Bowman comfortable. And then Leon Johnson can come out of nowhere and do what he did last week when you're down eight receivers the third down,
right,
or whatever. And, you know, and then you got to give credit to Charlie Dickey for getting the offensive line going. And you got to give credit to Brian Nardo for the way the defense has come. Then you look at Nick Martin, his growth, then Anthony Goodloe and the secondary holding on with all these young guys. There's just so many things you can,
right,
look at and say, it's one of the better coaching jobs and playing and players adapting that I've seen in a long time at this level.
And then you mix into that, I know there are a lot of guys in leadership roles this year that were not part of last year, but there are a lot that were. And those guys felt the snowball of last year, the second half of the season. They could have been overwhelmed by what they felt with those two losses and let the snowball rebuild. But they didn't. They were able to refocus their energy, refocus their goals, and make it work. There's so much about what they've done that impresses me. But that said, now we're here with a Bedlam game that is huge for all the other reasons we talked about, and it's huge for the Big 12 standings. It's really entertaining. In Stillwater, where OSU won the last time that they played a Bedlam, where they won 9 of 10 as home underdogs, and they're underdog, though the spread has been dropping from what I've seen. It's already down around 4 in some places.
Yeah, it was like 6.5, I think, and then 4. I thought it was gonna be like 4.5 is what my guess was yesterday before they came out. And
yeah,
so,
I was more in the 5 to 6 range myself, but it's obviously already moved down. So
it's just such a remarkable thing. And you think about it too, if OSU wins, they can end up in Arlington. But they can also end up in Arlington against OU again too. So we could be talking all this Bedlam hype of this is it.
Right.
And then they could be playing for a Big 12 title game again in December.
We get another one in a month. Right. That would be fun.
That would be fun.
That would be the end all be all of a fun for this season.
Yeah.
Let's move to the game itself. Obviously, I think the biggest thing on each side of the ball is OSU's ability to run the ball with Ollie Gordon, which is obviously going incredibly well, and OU's ability to stop the run, which I think is a little shaky, particularly if Danny Stutzman doesn't play at linebacker. That's if you're OU, that's the big concern you have, because so much of what Oklahoma State can do offensively comes off of Ollie Gordon breaking off long runs. So I think that's where the story of this game is told. There's going to be a lot of other things that happen, other guys that step in as big-time players, making important plays, but that's where it's going to start and end for me, I think, Jacob.
Yeah, it's a good play. I mean, everything right now starts with Ollie and ends with Ollie anyways,
right,
for OSU, so that's where you've got to go. I mean, because they're going to keep feeding him until someone can stop him.
Exactly.
And, you know, Gundy talked today about how Cincinnati's put an extra guy in the box, and they figured out how to get around it, and they go right at one of the best defensive tackles in the country.
Yeah.
And have success. And so I think if Stutzman's not in there, they're just going to go up the middle again.
Right.
Right? I mean, this isn't the same defensive line that OU has had in the past.
Right.
Where they can just go and overwhelm a team up front.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you know, that's where you're going to look. I also look at third downs.
That's going to be huge.
OU's very good on third down offensively, and OSU has been not nearly as good as it has been in the past few years on third down defensively. So I think that's going to be a big telling part of this too, is if OSU can get stops and get off the field defensively. Mm-hmm. They've done a good job preventing points, but they've been bending and not breaking a lot. And OU's the kind of offense you can't do that too much.
Right. And, you know, Dylan Gabriel has been much better with his downfield passing attack this year than he was a year ago when he was overthrowing everybody, it seemed, every other play. And that's obviously something that has been an issue for Oklahoma State, giving up long pass plays, having some busts in the secondary, and you know that Gabriel is going to want to attack those young safeties in particular, the inexperienced safeties that he can, you know, line up one of his receivers against. So that's going to be a major factor in how well Oklahoma State is able to hold up and not get busted on some of those big plays like they've been doing. So that's going to be a fascinating thing. We'll see. You know, I would assume that Venables has something unexpected on the defensive side, to whether it's to attack Ollie Gordon or just to try to keep Alan Bowman off balance, keep him uncertain about what's going on. At the same time, I'm really curious to see what the next step is for Casey Dunn.
Yeah.
His creativity has been on another level this year. We're seeing every week, we're seeing key plays at big moments that are stuff that we haven't seen before at all. So, you know, I think back to the play action that led to the first touchdown, or the Brennan Presley reverse handoff for the 1 yard touchdown.
I go back 2 weeks ago, they go five wide with Ollie and use him as a decoy.
Yeah.
And throw it over to, was it Bray?
Jaden Bray on the other side.
And so, I mean, just stuff like that Casey hasn't been able to do. That was 3 weeks ago, I guess, but hasn't been able to do consistently because of injuries and things like that he can do now.
Exactly. You mentioned Jaden Bray. We should talk some receivers, because that was another thing we discussed with Mike Gundy today. He says, don't expect Leon Johnson III to be redshirted at this point. I'm pretty sure we discussed this on the postgame podcast, even though it was 3 a.m. and I don't really remember a whole lot of it.
Yeah, it's kind of a blur.
Leon Johnson, basically, if he plays one snap in any game the rest of the year, his college career is over. Not over until the end of the year.
Thank you.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that.
Thank you so
Great
much.
Service. Thank you.
Yeah. That's hardcore pre-gaming right there. Double fist.
That's really fresh and good.
Very nice. But so Leon Johnson III, sounds like they're just gonna have to play him now. I think Leon would really like to redshirt. I think Casey Dunn would love to redshirt him, because he sees kind of the unpolished gem that he has and what he could be with another year of training. I just don't think it's going to be possible. Now Gundy didn't go into specifics about Bray, Shetron, or Blaine Green and their injury status going forward, but we'll see what happens in terms of who's available for Bedlam.
My question is, and I haven't dug into this, so this is why I'm asking, maybe you know, is there an appeal process or anything, in any way you could try to get Leon an extra year? Because he sat out the COVID year, which I don't know why he sat out the COVID year. And that doesn't give him that extra year of eligibility. So is there, I mean, he played baseball though.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
It's different. I guess that's different. I don't
know. I mean, I think he could get an extra year of baseball eligibility if he wants to go play for Josh Holliday, maybe.
He's a pretty good center fielder from what I've heard.
From what I hear.
But.
It seems like he could probably cover a lot of ground.
Yeah.
But yes, my understanding is because he sat out the COVID year, you know, Division III, they don't allow players to redshirt at all. There was actually a conversation that had to be had with the NCAA as to whether they could even redshirt him this year if they tried, because he had played 3 years. And they finally found out that they would be allowed to redshirt him at this level. So that was a whole.
Well, then why can't you still redshirt him? Because now you're at this level, you should have a redshirt still, I would think. But I don't.
We're right. I mean, that's the issue, though.
I mean, they would
love to redshirt him.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They just, because of the injuries, they're not going to be able to.
Gotcha. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, it's very complicated.
It's a mess.
It is.
I'm double fisted now, Scott.
You are getting after it. You're going to be ready for the Rangers tonight.
Yeah.
I can tell. All right. Other things from Gundy today. He was all over the place, as is expected on a pre-Bedlam.
Here, what else you talk about? I think how have we gone this far not truly talked about Ollie Gordon?
Yeah, that's fair.
And what he's been doing. Third week in a row of being the offensive player of the week for the Big 12. I'm sure national awards are going to start popping up again tomorrow for him. Those usually come out on Tuesday.
Right.
So those will start popping up. And Gundy was asked about how Ollie's handling the spotlight, which I thought was all fascinating conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we talked about this on the last podcast, again, it was 3 a.m., but the fumble and how Ollie responded and slamming his helmet on the sideline and doing all those things, and how Gundy went over and had a long conversation with him about, hey, you can't do this. I've been around the best. They don't do this. You can't do this. Ollie apologized apparently multiple times.
Right, sounds
and
like
it. Went and fixed it and was better and responded well. And I think that's kind of showing how Ollie's handling this, because when you talk, like I wrote about Ollie last week, when you talk with his mom, you talk to one of his old coaches, like this is a humble kid who wants to just win and play football and have fun doing it. And that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was fascinating. Also, it's fascinating how Gunny talked about how Ollie's a kid that can really market himself if he keeps this up,
right,
because he's got a million-dollar smile. He's got all this stuff about him that is so popular and endearing to people that I mm-hmm. think that he can market. I thought all that conversation was fascinating, because we're to the point now that I don't think Ollie can seriously get in the Heisman talk, because the first three games of the season and running backs in the Heisman talk are really hard anyways. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be in some people's conversations. And we're
Absolutely.
Getting to that point where he's going to stay there if he keeps this up and maybe even burst into some polls.
Yeah, he absolutely is.
Ballots, sorry.
Yeah, no, I think the possibility of him having a good enough finish to the season to get himself to New York is within the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be taken seriously as a contender for the trophy, but I do think he can get to the point that he's, you know, a top four guy that gets a trip to New York.
I might say if he runs for 250 again against OU this weekend, I'm going to put him in New York.
Okay. That's absolutely
right. I just feel like if he does it, you might as well just put him in New York, because okay. that's going to be incredible if he pulls that off.
Good. So the ticket that I booked on Southwest.com, I'm okay to hang on to
that?
Yeah,
I think so. Okay. I mean, you know.
Maybe it's just, maybe this is all just me wishful thinking my way to New York for a weekend in
yeah.
December. I don't know. But yeah, listen. So we talked in the post game, and we've written about Ollie's back-to-back 250-yard games, the only guy in Oklahoma State history to do that since Barry Sanders. In doing some research on that, I found an even more exclusive list, not more exclusive, it's still just those two, but a list that should be easier to get on than that,
yeah.
that nobody else is on. The only two guys in Oklahoma State history to rush for 270 yards in two games, period, for their careers. Now, Barry did it, five.
You told me five.
Five times in one season, which is, I still can't remember.
And not even playing full games most of
right.
that season.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, sitting at a lot of fourth quarters.
Mike Gundy made sure to point that out today, that Barry didn't play most of the full games. In
right.
That he pointed to the two they did, OU and Nebraska. The
yeah.
two he said he played the full games on.
Yeah. And
slept on the sideline the rest of the time.
Right. So Ollie now already has two games over 270 yards. And he and Barry are alone on that list, and there's nothing that tells me that he's not going to pop another one at some point this year. I mean, you add in his receiving yards, we go to just scrimmage yards. He's got three straight games over 280.
Yeah,
and it's just pretty ridiculous what we're seeing. Obviously, every team is going to fully game plan around him from here on out. But if anybody was going to stop him, I would have said it would be Cincinnati. And they figure out a way to run the ball against Cincinnati. So, incredibly impressive what he is doing right now. I got asked this the other day, and I know that Mike Gundy has often compared him to Keith Tostin.
Uh-huh.
I covered Tostin for a season in 2008, and he was splitting time with Kendall Hunter that year. But it was kind of a thunder lightning type of duo. Is there an old running back that you think of when you watch Ollie Gordon run?
Oh man, I'm not great at this game.
Because while you think about that, you know Tostin, I don't know what he actually weighed. He seemed a little slimmer than Ollie. I'll have to look up what his actual weight was, but he seemed a little slimmer. Was very physical. Probably because of the lack of size. Probably more physical runner than Ollie.
Yeah.
Just from the standpoint of he, I don't think he was that big.
I don't have anybody. You can keep going, because I don't.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
the guy, and I'm not saying that he is this guy, but just his running style reminds me a lot of Eric Dickerson.
Okay,
similar build, the long strides, those sorts of things. You know, obviously he's got a ways to go to be Eric Dickerson, a Pro Football Hall of Famer, but that's the style I see. That's the vision I get when I watch him run. So, very excited about where this is all going to go. It's going to be a great story no matter what happens with Ollie from here on out. So, what else about Gundy stuck out to you today? I know you wrote a little bit about some of the different things.
No, I mean, I think we've covered pretty much all of it. He's pretty glowing on Dylan Gabriel and his toughness and his sneaky ability to run the ball.
Right.
How he's pretty deceptive with his speed. And so I thought that was fascinating, too.
And he pointed out one thing that I've noticed in what little bit of OU I've been able to watch this year is that he really seems to like running in the red zone.
Yes.
Especially inside the 10. And he's really effective at that. It's going to make the linebacker's job really important this week. You know, I know Nick Martin. I'll even throw Kendall Daniels in this conversation with the linebackers because they're going to be the guys that have their eyes on Gabriel the most, mm-hmm. and are going to have to be able to make plays sideline to sideline, which Nick Martin has been really good at so far. Kendall Daniels, I think, is certainly in that category as well. You know, Colin Oliver, this is it's a whole different world for him all year, but his development as a linebacker, I think, has been really impressive. I'll be curious to see how much they try to use him as an edge rusher, mm-hmm. as opposed to traditional linebacker. How they kind of juggle that and let him be able to move around and do some different things. I think that could be fascinating as well. So, a lot of stuff about that aspect of this game, because Dylan Gabriel is not the fastest guy that OSU has faced in terms of a running quarterback. But he is effective when he does it. So it's going to be an important facet of this game, I think. All right. Anything else from Gundy, or is that about all the excitement?
I think we've had the excitement.
Like we said, the old Bedlam stuff that you've read about.
Go find that on oakholeman.com.
Yes,
exactly. Gundy and Brian Bosworth. You gotta go read that.
Yeah. I highly recommend the vitamin C.
Yes.
About Bosworth having some vitamin C and a few drinks. But that's the most exciting part of it. You'll have to go check that out in what Jacob wrote. So with that, is it time for we're halfway to a Stone Cloud 6-pack already.
Yeah, Stone Cloud 7-pack.
Yeah, exactly.
I got 7.
You're ready to go. So with that, is it time for the Stone Cloud 6-pack, Jacob?
It is. It is. It's going to be some fun questions for these players later today from me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to have to check the ABV on this brown.
It's
here.
6. What, 6%. Oh, is that,
okay, not well, not terrible.
I looked earlier before the podcast.
Good call there. All right. Well, as always, three categories regarding the game itself, and then our draft, which I'm very excited
about.
Yeah,
and I've definitely done my homework on these three categories about the game itself, because I have no idea what they are. Here we go.
I have not told you. I was nice to Joe last week.
Did you tell Joe ahead of time?
I told Joe the three categories.
All right, well, I still don't want to know. I like this.
I've got some ones, some fun ones, I think. So we'll start with the man of the hour, Ollie Gordon. And as we discussed, three weeks in a row, over 280 yards from scrimmage. So that's the category I'm going in, and I'm lowering the number, 199.5, over or under scrimmage yards for Ollie Gordon. Is he going to get 200 is what I'm asking you. Is he going to have a fourth straight 200-yard from scrimmage game?
I'm going to go under.
Are you?
Yeah. I think OU is the best defense they're going to face in this stretch.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I know Venable's enough to know he can really game plan for someone like mm-hmm. Ollie. So I think I'm going to go under.
Yeah.
Though I'm going to put a caveat saying, if he goes over, I'm not going to be surprised, because they're going to hammer him at the ball. So.
They are. They are. And I think the volume is what's going to get him there ultimately. Okay. That and
the screen game.
The screen game. The fact that we'll see how things change tonight and tomorrow when OU folks speak to the media.
True.
But it sounds like Stutzman probably won't be able to play. A lot of speculation that it's a high ankle sprain, and that guy is the soul of that defense.
Yep. He's like Nick Martin.
Yeah,
a little bit with tackles and getting the football and stuff.
He absolutely is, and I think that is going to give Oklahoma State a chance to take advantage of a redshirt freshman backing him up and make some things happen. So I'm going over.
Okay, that's fair.
The 200 there. All right.
And I kind of want to be wrong, and not that I'm rooting for OSU in this regard. Like I'm not. Like I just want, but I want the story.
Right.
I want the fun absolutely. Of this of Ollie.
Yeah. So. Like this is the type of ride that
yeah.
that people in our seat as journalists dream of.
Yes.
To get to go on a ride like this, and like I said, I'm ready to book my tickets to New York just for the fact of being in New York in December.
I've always wanted to do that. I'll be jealous.
Oh, no doubt. All right, this has become one of my new favorite categories for the Stone Cold Six Pack, combining sacks and interceptions, sacks and picks. So the line right now, over or under 4.5 combined sacks and picks for the OSU defense. 4.5. You know, they've been averaging, a little over 2 takeaways a game.
Yeah.
But few of those have been fumbles.
I'm going to go under.
Going under.
Gabriel's just elusive enough to really hurt
yep.
that. I'm not saying the turnovers. I think the turnovers can get them close.
Mm-hmm.
But getting Gabriel down on sacks is pretty hard.
Yeah. I can see that. I'm going under as well. Yeah. I think they can get to 4.
Yeah.
They get to 5, they're having some real success.
Yeah.
So I think I could see 2 of each pretty yeah. comfortably. But I think getting over that is going to be a real good sign for Oklahoma State. I don't know that they can do it. All right. Number 3 in the Stone Cloud 6-pack. Going a little bit big picture here.
Okay.
Will there be another Bedlam played before 2045?
Yes.
You say there will?
Yeah.
All right. So there's 3 different options. One is obviously the Big 12 championship this uh-huh. year. 2 is a bowl game. 3 is a regular season non-conference game. Which direction of those 3 do you think is most likely?
Non-conference.
Non-conference?
I think 31. Isn't that what Joe was writing there today?
They both have an opening, yes.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen.
Think
eventually.
So?
That's just my gut. I have no insight of this whatsoever. Right. Do not run to the market with this. Mm-hmm. I have no idea, but I think that will be it.
My only hesitation with 31 is that it's a single year.
Well, that's true.
So, like, who gets the home game? All those sorts of things.
Yeah. Okay. That's
now,
fair.
I think I'm with you. I think it'll be played again before 45. I think TV will get involved and make this happen at some point.
Yeah.
And once you get past it's either 37 or 38, both teams have openings in their non-conference for yeah. Power 5 opponents. I think we'll see it happen by then. I don't know that it'll ever be a 100% every year again thing, but I do think that by 2040, I'll say we'll have another one. Definitely by but on the schedule before 45. So
is Mike Gundy still the coach?
I feel safe in saying no.
Okay.
At that point.
Okay. I do too.
All right. Well, with that, we'll move to the draft. Which it's a good time because that sun's starting to shine
really
in.
Good, yeah.
It's getting a little rough. But in honor of you and your Texas Rangers, your trip down to Arlington for game 1 of the World Series, we're drafting postseason.
Right. Sorry. I just can't do it. Yeah. That was such a great, great night.
Right. It's like I should have been like testing you the whole show. Like if you had like a serious face, I'll just go Adolis Garcia
yeah,
and just
Corey
watch.
Seager.
Yeah, it's exactly. Well, just watch
yeah.
what happens.
Yeah.
But in honor of your trip to the World Series, we're drafting postseasons. Your favorite postseason, I don't want to say format, because certain sports
always
change.
Yeah.
A little bit, but basically a sport. College or pro, it's all on the table, but it's got to be a true postseason. With that, I will open it up because I'm a nice guy.
And you know what my pick's going to be. Just put MLB baseball down.
Yes, exactly.
I've always loved the baseball playoffs as long as I can remember. No matter how much has changed, nothing beats October baseball that has meaning to it. Because those teams, everything gets amplified so much. Everything's so intense, every pitch. And I think that way even when the Rangers aren't in it.
Right.
And now all of a sudden the Rangers are in it and I'm going, this is the most stressful thing in the world. And so... like, I think playoff baseball, just because it gets that blood going and just heart rate up and everything,
right.
I think postseason baseball.
Okay, this is an unscripted moment here in the show
yeah.
and taking people behind the scenes just a little bit. We're recording this on the camera that's as part of your iPad.
Yeah.
An ESPN alert just popped up. during while you were giving that answer.
Did you see what it was?
I did. I couldn't read it because of the sun.
Okay.
But how much panic was there in your mind as soon as an ESPN update that could be something like Max Scherzer, you know, has a blister on his finger?
Let's see. Look at my phone here real quick.
All right. Are we good?
No, it's an Adam Wainwright alert for some reason. So whatever.
Oh, okay. Well,
he's not involved. No.
All right. All right. Very good. But
he's retired.
But I just wondered how much there had to be some emotion in seeing an ESPN update.
A little bit.
All right. That was my thought. Now, as you alluded to, I fully expected you to to go Major League Baseball with your first pick, which I knew. Your second pick was probably going to be this, but it opens up the door for me to take it with my first pick, and that is March Madness.
Ah, yep. I knew I wouldn't get that because, well, you know.
Right.
I'd take baseball.
So, exactly. And perfectly understandable.
And you could argue that's the best postseason format in general. I mean, the NCAA tournament is what it is.
It's so much fun. It's, you know, it was the first one that I really understood, you know, as a kid because my dad would get back then we didn't have a printer.
You had to get the Sports Illustrated bracket,
right? Exactly. The Oklahoman had it in the newspaper.
Yep.
My dad would go buy like six newspapers the day that the bracket came out, so we could all fill out our brackets.
Yeah.
All of that sort of stuff. So, so that's been an obsession since as long as I can remember.
Yeah. No. It's a tremendous format. I eat up to, and it's just, that's unfortunate even to do. That's okay though.
Yeah.
There's other options.
So that takes us to it. What is your second pick?
Oh man, it gets tough from there. Cause I feel like it's those two and everything else can kind of be debatable from there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's hard to argue with the NFL playoffs.
That's fair.
Like, it's a little more predictable than the two we picked.
Right, right.
But I like what all leads to the Super Bowl. I've always been a huge fan of the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
no matter who's in it. And I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, so obviously I've not had a rooting interest in the Super Bowl in a very long time.
Right.
But I just love that event and what that leads to.
Yeah. The championship weekend, you know, 2 weeks before the Super Bowl is one of the coolest days because, you know, Sunday is just typically, you know, a couple NFL games, and so when you get that with those stakes, it's so much fun. No disagreement from me there. I'm sticking in the college realm for my second pick. I'm actually going to go with college softball.
I wonder if you would take that because you've covered a ton.
I've covered it basically every year that I've been at the Oklahoman, which would be I'm in my 18th year now, so it would be 17.
Yeah.
I missed 1 year where I did not cover the Women's College World Series. So 16 of the last 17 Women's College World. Well, then there was COVID in there, so that messes up the math even more. All of them but one over the last almost 2 decades.
That have been held.
Yes, exactly. So I love the format, especially now. You know, when I first started covering it, it was still dominated by UCLA and Arizona.
Yeah.
And parity has really come in. We saw UCLA get beat by two unseeded teams on their home field in regionals. Didn't even make it to Supers last year. All sorts of fun stuff. The Super Regional format is a blast. And then obviously the Women's College World Series is one of the coolest events that I think is going. So does that
take college baseball off the table? Because it's same format.
Same format, but it's a different sport.
Gotcha, okay.
I mean, and especially when you work in pitching and all the thought that has to go into that, how different that is handled, I think it's definitely a
because that's what my next pick is. I'm just going to pick college baseball.
Perfect.
And especially, I'm going to include, though, the conference tournaments with that because
I like that.
I love conference tournament week in baseball. I love covering the Big 12 baseball tournament.
Right.
And I love everything associated with it because there is so much strategy involved in that. It's double elimination.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all kinds of things you got to get through. And then the same format for softball for baseball leads to Omaha, where you've got 10 days there.
Right.
It's even longer than the Women's College World Series. But there's so much strategy involved, like so the pitching, the hitting. Anything can happen. We've seen OSU have some very high moments, some very low moments the last few years. And the intensity of that alone is so worth covering to me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good stuff. All right. So was that your third pick?
That was my third pick. Yeah.
All right. Very good. So that brings me. I had two more on my list. So I'll give them both a shout out. The golfer in me really wanted to pick the college golf format.
Okay.
They have stroke play, then match play. It has blended the two of them, made it very exciting. And the match play is the great equalizer. If you can get to that top eight, you've got a shot to win the whole thing. I really enjoyed it. I especially enjoyed when Oklahoma State hosted it here at Carson Creek.
Oh yeah.
And got to cover that day to day to day. I covered the women, and then the men start right after that. Covered that. It was like 12 days hanging out at Carson Creek, which is not the worst thing in the world if you're me. So I wanted to pick that, but I didn't. I'm actually going with another sport that's a little off the beaten path. I'm going with NASCAR.
You're a big NASCAR guy.
I am not
a NASCAR fan.
Right.
But I don't understand it, but go ahead.
Right. No, it's understandable, but I started covering NASCAR for us. I would go down and cover all the Texas races twice a year. And one of those was always a late season race. And back before they instituted the what they first called the chase and now called the playoffs, you could get to the last race of the year and the champion is so far ahead of everybody that nobody can even catch him in the last race. There's no drama. They brought in this playoff that's they eliminate after every third race. We've seen some real drama, particularly with Christopher Bell, an Oklahoma kid who I've interviewed several times, written about several times, and he last year won twice on elimination day to advance to the next round when he otherwise would have been knocked out, got himself into the final four. He won two weekends ago to get himself advanced. He'll be in the final four this weekend. It's been a really cool thing to get to cover.
So I don't watch this. But are there four cars just racing by themselves?
The whole field still races.
Okay.
But it's all based on where you finish.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. I didn't know if it was like a Cars movie and you have three racing.
Yeah. No. Still got to deal with all the other all the other 36 guys.
So why are the other guys racing?
Money.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I figured, but I thought I would ask. Like, yes. I mean, what's the point at that point unless you're getting paid?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So that is my final pick. I've really enjoyed it.
You know the one I considered?
What's that?
And I didn't pick this mainly because I don't, people who listen to this may not care or understand it or aren't even from Oklahoma. The Oklahoma High School Basketball State Tournaments.
Oh, man. Oh, I didn't even consider that one. But man, that is such a fun. Really, 2 weeks when you work in the small schools before.
That's the best 2 weeks of covering high school sports, being around high school sports. Those tournaments alone, because there's so much high drama. Every town, the towns are so into it. The communities, everything. I almost picked that, but I just thought, I don't know who. It's hard to explain if you've never experienced it. You live in Oklahoma.
Right, exactly. And even some people that have, maybe they're, at a 6A school or Stillwater here or whatever, and their only experience is with the 5A, 6A tournament at Oral Roberts. Completely different feel at the big house in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Which I was out at the fairgrounds not too long ago, and they're not going to have the new one ready for next March.
They're getting close.
It's coming, and they already got the new big house under construction. Going to be really exciting to see that whole new facility. So, that was an excellent one. That by far was.
I would have picked it, but like I said, I just felt like it was almost out of bounds here.
Right. No, that's fair. All right. Well, with that, I think we've covered it all.
Yeah, I got another beer to drink. So let's go.
You do. You need to get to it so we can go. So you can go slur your speech in front of college kids.
Yeah, perfect.
All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap it up. Thank you for joining us. We'll have our post-game Bedlam podcast. It'll be up probably sometime on Sunday. So make sure you're subscribed and can check out all of that. But thank you for listening and watching the Cowboy Chronicle.